Mr. Atkind, Reel 16. Mr. Atkind, you were talking about the news of Hitler's death and the effect that had on...
Yes, and the man whom I don't remember his name, but he was the Joker. We knew, nicknamed him the Joker. He ran out dancing into the field, and the German lifted his gun and shot him. And we all could see he sort of raised his arms, turned around and collapsed, like as if puppet on a string, you know, the strings were cut, you know, it was a very strange thing, and there was silence. We were very sad, because we thought now the war is virtually over, but what will happen to us? The following morning, they took us marching again. And towards the evening, we were walking through a forest when suddenly, so walking down on a narrow winding path, suddenly we saw two bodies, two Germans, hanging from the trees.
German civilians?
In uniform.
Soldiers.
And they were... They had boards, Verräter, it's traitor, on their chests. And bullet holes. Bullet holes through their chests and faces, filled with blood, waxy, sort of yellowish, waxy faces. And the boots, the muddy boots, were sort of near our heads, level with our heads. And there was a deathly silence. And the SS men were, we were afraid, because it had a terrible effect on our guards as well. And soon afterwards, they shot somebody at the back. And I realized that they were now more nervous, because they could see their own soldiers. But then a thought occurred to me, that if they would shoot all of us, they may be mistaken for deserters, or they would have to report somewhere. And because of it, I thought they need us, they need some of us. They can shoot another one and yet another one and so on. But they need us in order to justify their existence at that moment. And that gave me some hope.
Did they try and set the bodies down at all? They just leave them?
No. They left them. Then the following when we were in another barn for the night, Oizer came to me with the other man who was the tailor, and with the tailor he managed somehow to make for himself a suit out of the blanket, which looked from a distance like a grey suit and not the striped pyjamas. And he said to me, "We are running away." And he says, "Come with us." I said, well, I realized he didn't really mean it, because I had my striped pyjama suit, which would be seen from immediately. So I just shook my head, and we embraced each other and said goodbye. And he and the other one managed to get away from the barn through some boards, and they disappeared. And I've never seen him since.
So you don't know whether he's...
No, I tried to contact Yad Vashem, and I made inquiries, always a valfish, but I've never came. I can't see how he could have survived, because otherwise I could have found him.
What would happen in the morning? Would the Germans discover that people were missing, or could they not tell?
When the Germans discovered, they counted, and they just accepted it, that few escaped.
They wouldn't take it out on the rest of you?
No, they would count a few times, whether they were confused themselves, whether they knew, whether they should have been 348 or 350, I'm not sure. But then there was another incident where one of my friends escaped. That was sort of maybe early afternoon, and they let us rest for half an hour in the middle of the day. And on the side, we were on the side of a road, and there was a ditch, and there was like an industrial drain sticking in from the field into the ditch, which might have been 18 inches diameter, and water was dripping into the ditch from it. It was like a draining the field, you know. And this friend of mine, his father was a teacher, so I knew him in the ghetto as well. And he realized he didn't have much strength left in him to walk. And while we were resting, when the Germans didn't see, but a few of the prisoners did see him, he went into the pipe and he disappeared. 18 inches diameter, he just disappeared into it. And few minutes later, another man who noticed what he did decided to follow him, and he also went into the pipe. The Germans lined us up and started counting, and they realized two were missing, and they were counting again and again.
And why did they suddenly decide to count at that point in time?
When they were lining us in fives, they did count us quite frequently, because we were kind of scattered a little bit in the field. And when they lined us again, they counted. And they realized two were missing. And we were facing the ditch and the pipe, which was some water was coming through it, just dripping, wasn't a lot of water coming out of it. And because some of the men were looking at that pipe, the German turned around and he realized what happened. And he took his revolver, looked down, and shot a few times into the pipe. And few seconds later, blood came from that pipe with the water. So I thought, that's it. My friend was killed. But then I met him in Prague. The second man who went after him, was shot dead. And he survived. When I met him at the railway station in Prague, I nearly fainted. Because he was alive. He told me later what happened. Should I tell you at this stage or later?
Yep, please tell this story now.
He said what happened, the other man got shot, and he waited until after dark. He waited for 6 hours. He was afraid that to get out too quickly, and then he slowly pushed the body out, and he got out, and he started. He wondered what to do, and he went and he found a camp where there were women, young women, Jewish camp. And he was liberated. He survived, and I met him in Prague with a girlfriend. Became friendly with one of the girls, and when I met him in Prague, he told me he was going to Luxembourg. But again, I've never met him since. Since I met him in Prague railway station.
So after this incident, after the shooting into the pipe, you continued on the march?
We continued on the march, but then we stopped on another farm. We were still in Sudeten, still in Germany. We didn't know it, but we were quite close to the Czech border. And we stayed for 2 or 3 nights in one place. The Germans obviously didn't know where to take us. They must have decided not to take us anymore into Czechoslovakia, because it was too late. By then, it was the 7th of May, 1945. And we were very weak, and people were dying. One of the men died that night next to me. He was one of the older men, and I remember he was talking to me, saying, "I will never see my wife, I will never eat bread and butter." And then there was silence, and in the morning I realized I was lying next to a corpse.
What would you do with the corpses?
Well, I didn't do anything. I never sort of lifted a corpse, but there was always somebody who volunteered for a little extra food to dig a hole and bury him. I'm not sure what happened, but that must have taken place, because it was on a farm. And when you wanted to go to the toilet, the German guard would take you, but he wouldn't look at you, you know, while you were squatting somewhere behind the building. And I wanted to go to the toilet, but the idea was not really that I needed to go, in order to find something to eat. And because there was a heap of some rubbish, I found an empty tin of condensed milk, and at the bottom of the tin there was a little bit sweet condensed milk, and I, with my finger, I was eating it while the German's back was turned. And suddenly he turned around and he realized that I wasn't, that I, it was only a pretext while I pretended that I needed to go out. So he took his gun and he hit me with the rifle end, with the tube, right in the chest, and was a piercing pain which I felt for years later. I sort of had pains right in the middle of my chest. Whether it had anything to do with his blow, I don't know, but I felt it for many, many years after the war. There was another incident on the march. I was always walking in the front. I always felt, if I can be in the first column, is the safest place, and also you're likely to find a potato or a beetroot or something on the way if you are the first in the line. And walking once, I remember, I noticed a tank was burning few yards away from the road, and under the tank was a sack of potatoes. And I left the column, ran towards it, and filled my pot with potatoes. They were baked potatoes from that burning tank. And I quickly rejoined the column. By then the Germans, by then, half a dozen other men tried to do the same, and by then the Germans had time to take the guns and shoot, and they shot 2 men who were trying to grab the potatoes. And I, at that time, you always At that time, Oiza was gone, and I wasn't sharing on the march. I was sharing with Jasza Krinsky. Whatever he found or I found, we would always share. And I gave him half of the potatoes, the baked potatoes. And he changed, he ate maybe two or three, and he changed the other three or four for a cigarette, because he was a heavy smoker, and he was a bigger man than I was, and I was very angry with him. But I realized that some people who are addicted to smoking needed the cigarette more than the food. And what happened with the cigarettes, some of the men would pick the cigarette ends that the soldiers or anyone else would throw into the gutter. They were picking that. And then, if they didn't smoke themselves, they would exchange it for a potato or something else. Another thing, on the march, in one of the barns, we were in one barn, and through the boards I could see that there were sacks with grain in the other building. So I managed to climb up towards the ridge of the building and climb into the other building. I let myself, I did it at night, and I dropped down and I filled my part of my shirt. I tore it and I filled it with grain, with corn, and I was chewing that while marching the following day. So by taking risks and trying to find more food, I realized that it's essential, otherwise I would not be able to keep up. Then on the 8th of May in the morning, the Germans lined us up, started counting. By then we were about 300 of us, half of the number that was, half of the original number. And there were the white flags were already hanging from the windows of the villages, and they stood up, the men, the women and children from the villages were standing outside for the first time, kind of quite close to us, and looking at us. And a boy of about 5 or 6 was standing there with a beetroot. So I realized that now he wants to give us the beetroot, this little boy. But so I was sort of telling him, throw it to me. But I was afraid because the German guards were marching up and down and counting us. And I realized that the boy will not throw the beetroot to me. So I left the line and took the beetroot out of his hand. And one of the SS men, who was nicknamed the Dwarf, he was one of the smaller SS men, and he walked with a long stick, and he noticed me, and he swung the stick and hit my ear. And I heard ringing in my ear, and when I touched it, there was blood, and I felt dizzy. And at that moment, a group of German soldiers passed by, stopped, and they were without weapons, and they were disarmed. They must have surrendered and disarmed. And our SS guard started talking to them, and somehow they were sort of making movements with their hands as if it's all finished now. and our assessments have started discussing, and instead of facing the way we were facing, we had to turn around and started marching in the opposite direction.
In the way in which it came?
To the way, yes, to the way we came. And we started walking downhill, and my head was spinning from the blow, the stick, and we were running quite fast downhill, a few hundred yards, and I was now one of the last in the row, because I couldn't keep up, and my head was spinning, and my ear was bleeding. And suddenly there was halt, and two American tanks appeared behind us, coming from the village, from the direction of the village. And I thought, now there is going to be shooting, and I ran towards the American tank. I was the first one on top of the tank. And I had a kind of a bird's eye view, looking down. So from the tank, I looked at what was going on, and the Germans tried to run away into the field, and the men who were stronger, because some of them were stronger than others, were trying to grab them, and some of them grabbed their guns, but they couldn't shoot, and one of them grabbed him by the boots, and the German managed to extricate himself without his boots and run into the field. And the Americans were laughing. They gave me chocolate, they gave me Camel cigarettes and a hard-boiled egg. And I said, boom, boom, meaning go and shoot the running Germans. And they laughed, Hitler kaput, finished, said something like that. And they were laughing at me and laughing at the scene that was happening before their eyes. And with the Camel cigarettes and the chocolate, I jumped off the tank, and we all started running back towards the village, the 300 men. And on the way, I ate the chocolate, and it had no taste. I couldn't feel the taste of the chocolate at all. I ate the hard-boiled egg, and it had no taste, because I didn't eat an egg for 4 years, nor chocolate for, well, don't know how long, because of the corn that I was eating. I sort of, my mouth, my gums, everything was sort of sore. I lost sort of sense of taste. When we got to the village, and the Germans escaped, when we got into the village, there was hardly anyone left in the village. There were a few old women and few little children appeared later.
Had the Americans told you to go to the village?
No, they didn't. Well, they didn't communicate. They just said it's all finished, and somehow we just ran back into the village.
Why? To keep behind?
Food. We wanted food.
Did the Americans carry on?
The tanks went in the direction they came, yes, they carried on.
What did you do once you got to the village then?
Well, first of all, we wanted food, and the women, they were old German women, they started cooking soups, and they fed us, they gave us. Now, what we found out a little bit later, that the old men, because there were no young men in civilian, they were afraid. You see, what the assessment told them, that we were criminals, very dangerous criminals, and they thought we were coming back to kill them, which was the last thing on our minds. And therefore, they were terrified. When we were liberated, they thought now 300 convicts are going to murder everybody. But this was the last thing in our minds. All we wanted is food. And of course, they were relieved and they gave us soups and they started feeding us.
They didn't realize that you were Jewish, and that's why.
I don't know if they realized. I don't know whether they were told we were Jewish or not. That I don't know. But the what I heard later, that we were dangerous criminals being taken somewhere. And therefore they are guarding us, you see. The question whether we are Jewish or not, we didn't go into any discussion. Then the men, realizing we were not going to murder anybody, they all came back and they were quite pleased to feed us. The next thing we wanted is to wash ourselves. And it was a beautiful sunny day, very warm. So we were virtually in the nude. And by then there was a lot of body lice. Because from the march, when we started, that started multiplying. And by then, this became quite a problem. So what happened? We got large pots. We made fires outside. And we were boiling our suits. Because the joke used to be then that if you leave your jacket on the floor, on the ground, it will walk away. Because it was so alive with body lice. So once we boiled everything, we were clean and we washed ourselves. And then for the first time I slept in bed with sheets. The Germans sort of gave us beds. I don't know how many of us managed because it was a small village, but somehow I was lucky. I was sleeping in clean sheets, between clean sheets that night. But I had nightmares.
Did you trust them?
I was not afraid. I was not afraid of the Germans, the old Germans, because we were now, well, some of the men were walking with guns. I don't think they could use it. I don't think they had any ammunition. But they were walking with guns and they put armbands of some sort. So suddenly we were kind of in charge. And we didn't see any German soldiers anymore, you see, so somehow I wasn't afraid anymore. But the mistake that we all made, we ate too much. And I was sick and vomited and had nightmares, and I dreamt the Germans came back, and I spent quite an unpleasant sort of night, but then I wanted to eat more. You see, we didn't realize that we should have been extremely careful. And we should have eaten the same soups that we had before, and not suddenly rich soups with a lot of fat in it.
Did anybody die because they ate too much?
Not. I wasn't there very long. I was there for 3 days in the village, and I know everyone had stomach problems, but I don't remember anyone dying then. People started going in different directions. And then you heard, now and then you heard a shot. And rumors were, well, be careful, we are safer here than going into the woods, because there was a wooded area nearby. And then we started saying, I want to go back to Poland to find out if my sister survived, you see.